Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a postman, and I love films. As C.S. Lewis once said, "You can never get a cup of tea large enough or a book long enough to suit me." But I do think the Hobbit trilogy was pushing it. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, Jamila Jamil, and even Bed Brambles. But this week, it's the brilliant presenter, DJ, and all-round legend, Clara Amfo. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 15 minutes of chat with Clara. You get beginnings, you get endings, you get a secret, you get a video, you get the whole thing uncut and ad-free. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Ted Lasso Season 1 and 2 is available on Apple TV+, so you can watch all of that. Super Bob and Soulmates are available on Amazon Prime. So, Clara Amfo. Clara Amfo is a presenter, a DJ, a Strictly Come Dancer. She's loved and adored by millions. We'd met a couple of times briefly before this, but we recorded this on Zoom a couple of weeks ago. She was so much fun. It was really lovely to hang out with her, and I really think you're going to love this one. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 191 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by a radio person, an MTV person, a dancer, a deluxe painter, a goggle boxer, a Britzer, a legender and a hero, and most of all, a statue. Please welcome to the show. It's the amazing, it's the brilliant, it's Clara Amfo.
Hey! Hello, Brett Goldstein.
Hello, Clara Amfo. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's lovely. It's delightful to have you here. For the listeners who maybe didn't know about you being a statue, that refers to the time Hannah Waddingham saw you in a dress and said, "Look at you. You look like a statue."
Listen, man, when Hannah Waddingham says you look like a statue, you take it. Although I was so overstimulated by the Night of the Brits, because it's quite overwhelming. I thought she said slag at first. And I was like, what? I was like, but you know what? Because you're wonderful, I'd actually take it. But hey, to be called a statue, it's pretty nice. Been called worse, you know.
It's a pretty good thing, a statue, generally. I mean, it means like you did something pretty great.
Well, you know,
or absolutely terrible.
I mean,
but
60
to be remembered.
Exactly. And actually, my inspiration for that night for my look were the muses from Hercules. So it kind of worked out exactly.
That is what it looked like.
Yeah,
there you go. Was great. Tell me this: what are you doing today?
All right, so today after talking to you, I have got to go and do a couple of interviews, and then I've got my radio show, and then I'm prepping for BAFTA because I'm hosting a red carpet show with the wonderful Bimini Bombulash off of Drag Race.
Amazing.
So I've got lots of films to watch.
Riddle me this: running a red carpet show, Is it insanely stressful? And are you, you've done it an awful lot. I can only imagine it's sort of nightmarish. Is it?
It is and it isn't. Like, I kind of get high off the excitement because you just never know who's going to turn up and who's actually in the mood to chat. Yeah. But then at the same time, you kind of feel sick because you're just absorbing everyone's nervous energy. Because yeah. One thing I've learned is that everyone who sort of, you know, walks down the red carpet, whether they like it or not, well, it's really about that, isn't it? Whether they like it or not. Yeah. I think everyone's faking or exuding a level of confidence that they may or may not have. And you can just really feel it. Do you know what I mean? And it just transfers.
I think, listen, these are all very, very, you know, high-class problems. But the red carpet business, it's fucking weird. It's so intense and it's so weird. The potential for embarrassment is so high. My God.
Yeah.
And you don't know, and, you know, you don't know. It must be hard for you if you've got to interview so many different people and you've got to remember who's who, what they're there for, what their thing is. I mean, I've been asked some fucking mad questions on the red carpet, and then in hindsight, I go, yeah, of course, you don't know what to say. Like, you're talking to so many people. What are you meant to say other than,
yeah,
what's your favourite crisp or whatever?
Well, that's it. It's such a weird one because, you know, I really try my hardest not to ask people like the baitest, most generic questions because they've been asked that a million times. But at the same time, I find that some people find it to be a relief to be asked a really basic question because they just want to get it over with. Because look, I think, and I'm sure you'll know this, especially like in the sort of acting world, some people are really good at being like proverbial movie stars and some people are happy to be a movie star and an actor or vice versa. Do you know what I mean? And there are people who are fucking brilliant on the carpet and, you know, you're all happy to see them. They're like, yeah, I'll talk to you. And other people are just like, look, please, I just want to go in there. I just want to sit with my crewmates and I just don't look at me, don't look at me, don't look at me. I'm just like, hey, how are you doing? You're right. Good. Okay. Blah, 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 blah. And it's fine, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, we navigate it that way.
Your brain must melt. How many on an evening of, let's say you're doing the BAFTAs, let's say, and which you are. Okay, let's say the Brits. You did the Brits, right? You did the red carpet of the Brits. In that whole evening where you're doing that, how many people did you interview on the red carpet?
Oh, gosh. I think about 30. And of that 30, maybe actually, 35, 40. And of that, maybe only 19 make the show because we do it as live. So we're recording between like 5 and 7, then it's on telly at 8 and then the big show happens. But yeah, they just have to pick and choose like who they want to put in. It's like, oh shit, Videl turns up. Quick, go, get her. Right, whatever. Oh, there's Little Sims. Oh no, there's somebody from Love Island or whoever. And then, you know. Right. So yeah, you just sort of, you kind of play it by ear really. Anything can happen, which is really exciting, but also makes you feel sick.
Yeah. Of the 30 to 40 that you interviewed, how many did you think, that was fucking brilliant? And how many did you think, oh my God, that was a disaster?
Joe, thank you for asking that because I don't know, like, I don't do telly to watch myself back and be like, oh my gosh, yeah, Clara, that was some great question asking that you did there. But like, there are those moments you're just like, oh yeah, Joe, well, that went really well. And there's other times like, oh my God, that person probably thinks I'm the thickest fucking person alive. Or, oh no, they didn't want to say that or they're really uncomfortable. And it's, but I'd say out of the 30, I'd say 16. Let's go.
That's
50%
really good.
In a bit.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Look, when one of the great privileges of my life is doing this podcast because you get to have a long conversation with someone, which is you don't do in normal life, and you get to know someone, and within the time, because it's a longer form thing, I've done some of these where it might have taken me 10 minutes to sort of figure how that person kind of works, like how we're going to work in this conversation and how to find your level with them or whatever. But if you're doing what you're doing, you have to find that or try to find that in like 5 seconds. 5 seconds for 2 minutes, right? Are you a massive empath and is it exhausting? And do you want to cry at the end of it?
Great question, because I have this, I've always had this conversation with quite friends of mine where I can't stand people who are like, oh my God, I'm like such an empath and I really feel everybody. Because I find it's like the people that go out of their way to let you know that they're empaths are usually narcissists, I found.
But I'm asking you. You didn't bring it up. I'm asking you. You don't have to.
Okay.
I'm forcing you to answer this question. You didn't say, oh, bring up the fact that I'm an empath.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. I'm an empath. Do you know what? I think I am, actually. I think I am. I just think, you know what? doing radio especially, and like seeing like artists and their sort of like development over the years, and like doing like film junkets or whatever, you see how people like change and grow, don't you? And like, you know, you see people start out like quite innocent and like sort of unaffected by the industry, and some of them keep it, some of them don't. And I totally get it. And, you know, so I'm answering this in a really convoluted way. I think, how do I describe it? I'm really thinking about this. This is a great question.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
I think there's a lot of people. We run to the arts to mend our broken hearts, don't we? Like, you know, you watch your favourite film, you listen to your favourite song, like you read your favourite book or whatever. And going back to what I was saying about how some people are great at being movie stars, some people are great at being actors, some people are great at being, you know, an artiste in the most purest sense of the word, and some people are great at being mega pop stars, you know. And I think those things feed why people get into the industry. And I think I have been able to sort of see that in different people, if that makes sense. Am I making sense?
Yeah, no, this all makes sense.
Okay.
But how does it apply to you?
I think I just see people. I just see people. So I don't know, man. Like, I'm not going to ask, you know, a pop star, for example, who's typically over-sexualized all the time by, you know, like old journalists who are like maybe twice her age. Like, so, tell me about that colour bra you're wearing when you made this music video. Like, no, fuck off. I'm fucking asking you that. Tell me why you wrote this song. Why do you love making music? That's what I actually care about. Nice. And I just try and be respectful of that with people, I think. I hope. Yeah.
But does it, I guess what I'm asking you, and I don't know why I'm pushing this, I'm just curious, because when you said about how overwhelming it must be, just taking on, very quickly absorbing, this person's really nervous, this person's really stressed, they need this, they need that, in very short bursts, whilst also being in the spotlight yourself, whilst also having a camera on you, and, you know, it's a lot of pressure. I don't think I've really thought through how hard it is what you do until now, and it's making me anxious.
I'm feeling a little bit anxious talking about it, but also, like, I'm excited. Like, I'm looking forward to, like, this weekend, the bits I've got coming up. So I'm like, yeah,
right.
Like, get me on there. But, yeah, it is overwhelming. But I think it's just that thing of knowing that everyone's just turned up to their job, essentially. And yeah. I think knowing that keeps me calm. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's what's made me relax a bit more over the years. Like, I rarely get starstruck anymore. Like, there's a few people I've met, I've been like, oh, fucking hell, like, I literally want to collapse. But I think I've just, everyone's just trying to get on with it. Do you know what I mean? I think in the most basic way to explain it.
Why do you do what you do?
I do what I do because I'm quite nosy. I think I'm the cat, you know, curiosity killed the cat. I'm like the cat that came back like 8 more times. I'm like, one more life, great. Clawing back. And because I just love talking to people. I really do. And I fucking love music. I love performance. I love, like, I always say it's the day my parents like got satellite telly. It was like one of the best days of my life because I was just obsessed with every like channel, like dedicated to whole things. Like, what, a whole music channel, a whole film channel, a whole this channel. I was obsessed. And I just loved theatre as a kid, but like, I think I still hold slight resentment for my parents not allowing me to do much performing arts. I feel like they let me do it, but my dad, God rest his soul, was like a proper academic. And right. I think he wished for all of us to get into like science or like, you know, maths or whatever. And like me and all my siblings, apart from my sister, like we're all in the creative industry. And I think he's like, shit. But he accepted it towards the end. But I just always love music and everything went with it.
Well, this is all really good, but I just realised that I forgot to tell you something.
Oh, fuck.
And I just looked at... I feel like an idiot because I think you were sent like a letter for this podcast, but I should have also... I'm just going to have to tell you, Clara. I'm so sorry. The thing is, you've died. You're dead. 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 Is that a problem?
Have I got a chance to say goodbye to anyone? Or
you, unfortunately, just before you died, you had said, I feel like the cat and I've had eight lives. And this was the ninth one.
Fuck. Damn.
How did you die?
Okay. So I died from absolute disgust and from treachery. Because anybody that knows me knows that I despise a particular herb with every fiber of my being. And that herb, for your American listeners, is known as cilantro. Over here in the UK, it's known as coriander. And it was sent from Beelzebub himself to terrorise every meal that I have ever thought I enjoyed. It's interrupted it and I despise it. And somebody, one of my enemies, snuck it into a meal and I was so disgusted that I choked to death.
So you didn't choke to death on the cilantro. You choked to death at the thought that there was cilantro in it. You were choked with rage.
It was a bit of both. It was disgust because I chewed into the meal, which was delicious. It was a lovely red velvet cake because that's my most favourite dessert ever. Love red velvet. Right. It's my fave. And an enemy basically put it in the layers of the cake. Because, listen, babe, there's haters everywhere. Trust no bitch.
Who is this enemy?
Maybe it's another broadcaster, or maybe it's somebody that I scooped to a big music interview or something, and they were just like, gotta go out of the way.
I think you're gonna have to name your murderer while we still have your voice.
Oh, I couldn't possibly trust no bitch. But it was like a, you know, in Showgirls when she chucks the pearls down the stairs. Exactly. This is the culinary equivalent of that. So yeah, somebody put up coriander and a slice of red velvet, and I was so disgusted, and the taste just knocked me out, and I choked and died. So yeah, that's how it went.
It's an absolutely tragic death.
It really is.
And we do have to get you on the Off Menu podcast next. Do you worry about death?
My own? Absolutely not. I'm genuinely not afraid of death. Again, I'm too curious not to be. Like, I don't fear my own death. I can't wait to see what's on the other side. No, genuinely, I can't wait. No, that sounds really macabre. Like, I love life. Yeah. I love to live. I truly do. But I'm not afraid. I'm more afraid for my loved ones, to be honest. Like, my father, God rest his... It was actually his anniversary of his passing just this week on Monday. Died seven years ago. Do you know what? I'm at a lovely place of acceptance, with his passing. But that was my biggest fear. I went through, again, actually, because of a film, I went through a phase of being obsessed with his death and being like, shit, 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 is it going to happen today? Is it going to happen today? For about two or three years when I was a teenager, just because he'd had heart problems and he'd gotten better, he had a stroke and he'd recovered like brilliantly, but he died in Ghana, where our family's originally from. But do you remember that movie called Ghost Dad with the awful Bill Cosby?
With Bill Cosby.
Yeah, Bill Cosby.
Ghost Dad, where he appears on a bus, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I remember watching that film as a kid and it sort of staying with me a little bit, then forgetting about it and then being reminded of it when I was a teenager and being like, oh my God. But that film, I think, was one of the first films that taught me about the sort of concept of death. And I was like, oh, okay. As a little kid, I was like, oh, then my dad will reappear like Bill Cosby. But obviously saying that now in 2022 is really
Ghost Dad affected us all. I thought about Ghost Dad an awful lot.
Exactly.
So you're worried about Ghost Dad, but you don't worry.
And I'm not worried about my own dad reappearing in under the guise of Bill Cosby. Thank God.
You're more worried about Bill Cosby reappearing.
I mean, to be honest, I'll categorically say I think he's repugnant and I fully stand by all of those women. But to answer your question, I don't fear my own death, but yeah, my loved ones. Like, my mum obviously is my only parent now, and I love her dearly, and the thought of her not being around, it's really fucking scary. But at the same time, I think I'm ready for it because I know what to expect. But at the same time, you just never know, man. Death affects us in very different ways, depending on the person also.
So you're very excited about, can't wait for your own death. What do you think happens on the other side?
To the powers that be, to the gods, the goddess, whoever, like, please give me at least another 40 years, yeah? I've got shit to do.
40? Come on.
Come on.
Come on. Yeah. More than that.
Okay, 50. Actually, no, Give me another 60. Thank you. Yeah. Cheers. Okay.
Cheers.
So what's your question? I was too busy talking to God.
What do you think? No, don't let me interrupt. What do you think happens when you die?
I think your energy rises out of your body. Mm-hmm. In Casper?
Yes.
Maybe not in cartoon form, but maybe in like a... Maybe. Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know, like... loads of whizzy colours or something, I don't know. And then I think you sort of like float around. I think you float around and maybe you like go into other people perhaps, but I can't fully believe that that's just it. It's weird because my mum is super, super religious. Like she's a proper old school, God-fearing, Ghanaian woman, like church on a Saturday and Sunday. Wow. Like then my dad on the flip side, he was a scientist by trade. So very much it's like fact and logic. So I think I've been slightly indoctrinated by my mum to just sort of, there has to be a heaven, surely. But then my dad was a bit like, he never said babe, but his kind of, the intention was like, babe, are you sure? Like at Christmas when my mum would go into like serious prayers around like the dinner table, she'd be like, thank you, Jesus, for the food. Da-da-da-da-da. And she'd be like full on like sermon. And I'd like open my eye from the corner and I'd see my dad would be like, so yeah, I can't believe this is just it, I think, because of my mum. But I just think life's too magical, man. Too much weird shit happens to it.
Yes.
Just to be this.
I've not heard someone say this. So you think that you float around, so you don't go to heaven, you sort of stay around here floating around possessing people.
Yeah, basically, but in a loving way.
How long are you possessing people for?
I think it depends. I think it's sort of like a...
Is it like Quantum Leap? And you're just going to do good deeds in other
exactly,
people?
Exactly, exactly. What's it? Yeah, we're all Scots. Is it Scott Bakula, Beluga, yeah. Whatever he's called? Yes. Yeah. Scott Bazookas.
Scott Baklava.
Yeah.
You pop in, visit someone's body. Oh, exactly. They need help. I'll sort this out. Then you pop out.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I like that.
Or you just sort of watch people, just make sure they're okay. Then you just, I don't know, then you just piss off other places and just have a nice time. Maybe just being nosy, maybe spying on people. Who's to say? Yeah.
So it's a bit like being the Invisible Man.
But not as scary.
But not a horror.
And not as creepy, yeah.
But up to you, really. You can do what you like, I suppose. If you're possessing people, you just happen to be a good person. If you were a bad person, you could possess people and do mad shit.
I could do some mad shit, but I also believe in karma, and I don't want to terrorize anybody. I want a peaceful afterlife, you know?
Yeah.
Life on earth can be stressful as it is. I want a drama-free life, you know? Afterlife, let me be more specific.
When you're not I'm just thinking through your life as a possessor. You're possessing people. Like, when do you sleep? Do you need sleep? Do you sleep when you're possessing someone who's sleeping?
No. That's a good question. I don't think you need sleep.
Or, you know, a different thing.
Yeah, I don't think you need sleep, but I don't think you're operating in the same way that you would in human form. You do what needs to be done, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess time is infinite and a flat circle anyway, so when you're that sort of energy, it doesn't matter, right? It's all happening at the
exactly.
same time.
Exactly.
Well, some of that's true, but also there is a stopgap area where you can chill out for a bit. We call it heaven. And you are, the doors are wide open for you. Come on in, Clara Amfo. Come yes. to heaven and see all your friends. However, in heaven, it's filled with your favourite thing. What's your favourite thing?
Do you know, it's going to be red velvet cake. Seeing as it killed me to get there,
wow.
It's going to be red velvet without the coriander in it.
And you're still trusting? Well, I guess you're in heaven, but, you know, I once had sushi that had a giant... green, it looked like an edamame bean, and then it started, the edamame bean started walking, and I thought that put me off for about a year. I've gone back.
That's okay.
But I'm like, your red velvet cake killed you, and now you're like, give me more red velvet cake. I respect it.
Well, thank you. I'm somebody that believes in you know, facing your trauma head on.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Red velvet can't be the enemy. The sushi couldn't be your enemy. You see, you faced it, you went back, and now you love sushi, I'm sure.
Yeah, I love insects. So you, red velvet cake everywhere. The walls are made of red velvet cake. The seats are red velvet cake. Quite comfortable. The beds are red velvet cake.
Mm.
The people look like red velvet cake. It's just red velvet cake, wall to wall. But all the red velvet cakes want to do is talk to you about your life because they're huge fans, but they want to know about your life through film. And the first thing they ask you, because why wouldn't they, is what's the first film you remember seeing, Clara Amfo?
Okay, now, can I beg mercy and say and ask... if I answer my questions really quickly, can I have multiple answers?
let's do a trial run.
Okay, all right.
Let's see how quick you can do it.
Okay, so I got four older brothers, well, three older brothers and an older sister, a younger brother. So I inherited a lot of, I guess, the first films that I watched, like, from them. And the first film that I truly remember watching and loving was, I'm going to keep doing, I think, transatlantic translations, because I know you got, I know you got an American fan base. So in America, it's known as Breaking the Movie, but in the UK, it's known as Breakdance the Movie. And and that is the first film I truly remember seeing and thinking, I'm obsessed. I love it. And my brother had the VHS, and we used to absolutely rinse the hell out of that film. And this is the film with the famous broomstick, and the guy Turbo is dancing to Tour de France by Kraftwerk. You know that tune?
Sing it to me.
And he's got this broom, and he's sweeping it outside this sort of bodega that they work in, and it was like magic. And obviously now as an adult watching it, you can see the bit of string holding it up. But I just remember watching that film and just being obsessed. Like, I love a shitty dance movie. They're my fave. That's my catnip.
I love a shitty dance movie.
Yeah.
Dance movies and sports movies, you can't really do them bad, I think. You can't, like, they always work. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. Well, it's tricky because...
Go on.
I don't know. I mean, Breakdance 2, Electric Boogaloo is an absolute abomination. It's it is a terrible film. But the original Breakdance is amazing. And actually, Jean-Claude Van Damme was in it before he became really famous. So for anyone that's seen it, he's in it as like a guy. He's in a unitard. They're like, there's like this like group dance shot scene. And they're, I think they're on like Venice Beach or somewhere like that. And Jean-Claude Van Damme is like shaking his ass in like a tight black unitard. But yeah, it's just a story of these like two street kids called Turbo and Ozone, and then there's a lovely girl by the name of Kelly, and she's a contemporary dancer, but she's bored of the dance world she's given. She's not getting auditions, and she meets these guys, and they teach her how to break dance. She appropriates their culture, and then they get their own show, which essentially is the basis for most dance films.
Hey,
black people, come teach me how to dance. Yeah,
that is very true. Come teach me how to dance, and now I'll win.
Exactly.
Did you watch this with your five brothers and sisters?
Yeah, so my sister was brought up in Ghana because she was my dad's daughter from a previous relationship. Because, you know, Papa was a Rolling Stone. Good guy.
But
he was a good looking guy when he was younger, do you know what I mean? So
good looking scientist.
Exactly, you know? But that was mainly me and my older brothers. I sort of inherited it from them, and like we'd like try and replicate like all the dance scenes and stuff, and just I could still create that movie from start to finish. And I still have dreams of being a break dancer.
Can you still do any of those moves?
I can't spin on my head as well as I'd like. Actually, I can't spin on my head at all. I'm chatting shit. But I think I can just about do that now.
What is the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared, Clara Ampo?
I actually love being scared, but in two different types of ways. Well, I hate watching films where like any kids are getting hurt. I just can't do it. And so in that sense, the film that scared me the most is Sleepers. I don't think I could ever watch that film ever again. I found it deeply disturbing.
Yeah, that's a really, 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 really dark film.
Yeah, really, really dark. Like Sleepers, oh my gosh. There is, bloody hell, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, I find really scary. But I love shit like trashy 90s thrillers. Like Rebecca De Mornay was such a little bitch in that film, but she's perfect. Like genuinely scary. But I think this film that scared me the most was the original It. Pennywise, old Tim Curry. It just reminds me of being at my cousin's house, because she had Sky before we had Sky, you see, because my parents would like send me to go and hang out with my cousins, because they were all girls. Like, you know, it's good for you, you know, good for you to hang out with like your girl cousins. And I just remember the trailer coming on TV, and there's that one bit when he's like, I'm your worst nightmare, come true. Like he shouts at like one of the little kids, and I remember just like being like, and I couldn't sleep for about 3 days. Yeah,
that's very sweet.
Very sweet.
No, as in it's sweet that you don't like watching. I mean, it's such a weird thing to say that you don't like watching kids being scared. I mean, I guess that there's. Have you seen the only way I got over this was by reading up on it. I think it's an excellent film. It's called Doctor Sleep. It is the sequel to The Shining.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's really good. It's much better than hearing the sequel to The Shining sounds, but it has one scene in it where the little kid from Room is sort of murdered by kind of energy vampire type things. And it's so disturbing. It almost ruins the film because it's so upsetting. And it's because he's screaming so much. It's really, really, really upsetting sequence. And it almost took me out of the film because it was so horrible. But afterwards, I read up on it. And the boy, who I don't know how old he is, let's say 10, that apparently when they were filming it, the actors who are attacking him were so disturbed because of his screams. They were like, oh my God, is this kid all right? What are we doing? And then the director called cut. And the actor, the little boy, got up, came over to the monitor and went, how'd that look? That looked good? And they were like, oh, he's just a fucking brilliant actor.
He is great. It's Jason Tremblay, yeah. That's his name. Is it Jason Tremblay?
Jacob,
that's it. Like, he's brilliant. But yeah, man, anything with kids getting hurt, like, you know, The Lovely Bones with Saoirse Ronan? I couldn't look at Stanley Tucci the same after. I had to watch Burlesque to take the edge off. I went to see it with my friend Simon at the cinema, and I was genuinely like so disturbed. Like, I had like nightmares for about a week. I just found it horrible because he was so good in it and so evil. And just, you know, those really long like close-ups on his face. Like, I think there's a bit after like he's killed her, and they just like zoom in on him, and I was just, and yeah, the thought of him was just like, oh, so yeah, I had to go and watch him be Cher's like gay best friend just to feel.
I had to go watch Burlesque to take the edge off is a phrase that isn't used enough.
Oh well, it's true. It's my truth. I'm standing in it.
That's all good stuff. What is the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier?
I am a crier.
Well, it's because you're such a bloody empath, isn't it?
I really feel things, guys. Like, I really care about people. I'm a really good person. Yeah. Really good person. I've got a few answers for these. Colour Purple, standard. I can only watch that film once every 3 to 4 years. I can't watch it more than once. Went to go and see the show in New York with the wonderful Cynthia Erivo, had me on the floor. Cynthia's a golden person. She just, fucking hell, she's amazing. But that film, I can only watch it once every 3 or 4 years. An American Tale, do you remember that? With the little mouse.
Of course I remember
American Tale. Who gets separated. Again, I think anything of like just kids being traumatised, I'm just like, I can't deal. That really makes me cry. But, the Magdalene Sisters. You seen that?
Yeah. That's not a fun movie.
It's not fun. And like, I was sobbing at the end. Like, remember that there's that bit where there's a character called Crispina, and she's got learning difficulties, and the priest has been obviously not been doing nice things with her, and she just starts screaming at him, you're not a man of God. Do you remember that bit? And I was just, yeah, man, I was on the floor. But sorry to answer your question. The film that makes me cry the most is Untamed Heart. Have you seen that?
With Marissa Tomei and Christian Slater? You bet I have.
Love that film with all my... It's my favourite Christmas movie, essentially. And I tell... Every year I've got a tradition. I post off on Instagram, like, every December. I'm just like, just so you know, this is the best Christmas film that you might have never seen. I think it's so beautiful. I love it.
That hasn't come up in such a long time.
Oh, I'm glad.
That was a real banger back in
Thanks.
The day.
It's like, I'll watch anything that she's in, and I'll watch anything that Rosie Perez is in, because I just still want to sound like her. But that film's fucking amazing, man. Like, their chemistry is like beautiful. And I just think it's really I just think it's a proper little Christmas gem. But actually, not just for Christmas, for all year round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. you'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Great shout. What is the film that people don't really like? It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it. You don't care what no one says.
Well, again, quite a few answers. Mariah Carey's Glitter, obsessed. Mm-hmm. Okay. She's thinking, people don't give Mariah Carey her dues enough because she's a really fucking great comedic like force. Like, she's really good at taking the piss out of herself. She released that movie around September 11th, so it completely flopped, and then she kind of went through a very sort of public breakdown. But there's some great bits in it, man. It's her, it's Max Beasley, it's Debrat off of 90s hip hop. Like, it's everyone. It's like, and it's really camp, and like, it's just really fun. And like, recently they her fans, which I am one of, got the soundtrack back to number one on iTunes, and I was genuinely like so happy for her. Like, she got her sort of yeah, she got her dues like 20 years later. But yeah, people cuss that film, but I love it. Dirty Dancing 2, Havana Nights, another nice fave. Listen, nice, Diego yeah. Luna, Romola Garay, mm-hmm. great actors. And, you know, everyone's got to start somewhere. I'm sure they probably wish that movie never happened. But I went to Cuba because of that film.
Oh, wow. That's fucking huge.
You know, but it makes me feel good. It's like, like the soundtrack's really good. It's a pointless sequel. It didn't have to happen at all, but obsessed.
What's the story in Havana Nights? Is it just the same?
So basically, yeah. So he's like, you know, I think the Cuban Revolution's happening. She's like some rich kid. Her dad works in like advertising. Like, they're very like waspy family. And then like, she sneaks out at night, and then she hears this music in the air. She's like, hey, what's that? And then all the Cubans are like sexy dancing. And then, Diego Luna teaches her how to dance, and like, they shag on the beach. And like, she meets Johnny. Oh yeah, Patrick Swayze has a little cameo in it.
What's he doing?
He's Johnny Castle, yeah.
Oh, wow.
As Johnny, so he's in that. So, love that. Love Batman and Robin. People slag it off, but I thoroughly enjoy it because I believe in Alicia Silverstone supremacy, and yeah, I was just happy for Batgirl to be about, because that's the one that's got Uma Thurman in it, right? That's the one I like.
No, was Uma Thurman's Batman Forever.
Right, okay.
I believe.
I'm confusing the two. The one that's got Uma Thurman and Jim Carrey in, and Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
Mr. Freeze is Batman and Robin.
Okay, well, I like the amalgamation of both.
That has Batgirl. Batman Forever is Tommy Lee Jones, Jim Carrey.
That's it. Well, I like all of that era Batman. I think they're terrible, but I love them. And also, I love Halle Berry's Catwoman. I think it's great. Anytime it's on TV, I'll watch it.
Batman and Robin is extraordinary when you watch it again. I think but you watch it now, it's extraordinary. Extraordinary piece of work.
Well, the thing is, I liked those Batman films in particular because they sort of reminded me of the ridiculousness of the TV show. You know, they were like very camp, and like, you could almost, if obviously you weren't hearing the pow, the boof, boof, whatever, but they were just like super oversaturated and really sort of, I think there was like a knowing wink with them that they were sort of not shit per se, but just there was a sense of humour about them that I think, you know, previous ones had lacked. It wasn't a bad thing. Like, you know, I liked the darkness of the other ones, but I just thought they were fun, and I was quite impressed being a kid of that age and seeing them. So yeah.
Batman Forever, great soundtrack.
Exactly. My brother's a massive U2 fan, and so he used to play you know,
help me thrill me, kiss me,
there
kill
we
me.
Go there we go there we go. He used to play that all the fucking time, and I remember the video because it was like Bono was like animated, wasn't he, and like sort of answering like it was like the U2 sign rather than the Batman sign or something like that, I think, if I remember correctly. All of that. Anyway,
What is the film that you used to love, but then you've watched recently and you don't like it anymore? And is it Ghost Dad?
Well, I haven't watched Ghost Dad for many, many, many years. But just off the top of my head, and again, every actor has got to start somewhere. And I'm sure even he isn't delighted by this film. But 40 Days and 40 Nights, Josh Hartnett, it is brilliant. We know this. Yeah. And it came on telly the other day, and just watching it as an adult woman, I was like, this is some bullshit. And there's a lot of problematic things that happen in that film. And I think, you know, when it first came out as a teenager, I thought, oh, wow, this is like so romantic and this is really loving. Oh, my God, he made Shannon Sossaman come by rubbing flowers over her. I can't believe it. And now I'm just a bit like, really? Don't know. And also, like, there's a bit where his ex-girlfriend, like, sexually assaults him. And we just sort of accept it. Like, she ties him to a bed and does things. And that's not cute in 2022, is it? You know?
It feels less cute.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. How do you feel about that film?
About 40 Days and 40 Nights?
Yeah.
I don't think I have actually seen it. The premise is he can't have sex for 40 days and 40 nights, but why is it? Why can't he? What's the...
So he does it so he can get over his ex-girlfriend, who randomly is the girl from Hocus Pocus.
Right.
It's the main girl from that. He does it to sort of like prove that, you know, men can still hold the power and I can get over her. But then he meets his manic pixie dream girl, which is Shannon Sossaman, in a laundrette. And then they form like this beautiful emotional connection, which includes them having sex with flowers.
With flowers, yeah.
And then all hell breaks loose with him trying not to have sex.
Does he not have sex for 40 days? Spoil it for me.
So the ex-girlfriend basically comes into his house where he's tied up.
Yeah.
He's handcuffed to a bed because he's waiting for Manic Pixie Dream Girl Shannon Sossaman to come and release him so they can finally consummate their budding relationship. But then the ex-girlfriend comes, no pun intended, and like mounts him and then, yeah.
And then what happens?
Well, she breaks him. So she breaks the streak and he's fucking fuming. And then the new girl comes into the house like, what the fuck? Like, what? Oh, my God. And then all hell. I mean, obviously, it's a happy ending. Again, no pun intended. But yeah, that's how it goes down.
Well, ironically, of course, you've now sold the film to me. What is what is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film's any good, but because the experience you had around seeing it will always make it meaningful to you, Clara Ampo.
Okay, Brett Goldstein. The film that means the most to me, there's probably a couple, spoiler alert. First one is The Craft.
Right.
Because it reminds me of going to my local cinema, which at the time was the Kingston Odeon, with three of my friends. One of my best friends at the time, who funnily enough went to cinema with me in Kingston to see The Craft. My best friend at the time was a girl called Fatima, and she lived by, you know, the big library in Sutton, where the 213 would stop right outside, Sutton Library. I would be on the 213 for an hour to go and see her on like Saturday afternoons, and like we'd either go to the Sutton UCI or she'd go to the Odeon in Kingston, and we'd like watch films and stuff and just hang out. But yeah, anyways, and if you're feeling really crazy, you'd go to what's the one in Croydon? Because you get the tram from Sutton to Croydon.
The view. They had the first view.
Yeah. I remember that cinema very well. Anyway, sorry, The Craft.
Saw a couple having sex in The View once in Croydon, mid-film.
What was the film?
Happy Times. I think it was Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, well, look, Sarah Connor, is she in that? Is Linda Hamilton in
that? No, she's not. That's the one. I think Claire Danes is in that one.
Okay. No, I get it. Fair enough.
Nick Steele. Anyway, carry on, please.
Kingston ODI, me and my friends, three of us, we were, I think, 14 at the time, trying to get into the cinema to see The Craft. And I remember us thinking we were all like proper big women getting like super dolled up in our like shit outfits. Like I think we'd all got like shirts from like Tammy Girl. And I remember I'd stolen my mum's perfume. Like my dad had got my mum that perfume Poison by Christian Dior. And I doused myself in it. So I was like, well, no, that's what 15-year-olds do. They wear Poison and wear like button-down shirts. And like we tried, I was like, we went up to the counter, we were just like, can we get 4 tickets to The Craft, please? And like the girl who's working on the counter, obviously she's probably only about like 19 or 20, but at the time it was like, oh my God, she's so great. And she just looked at us just sort of like, really? She was like, when's your date of birth? And we were like, 2nd of May, 19 and like, yeah, we didn't get in, so I think we had to go and watch. Oh, what did we watch instead? and we had to watch something shit instead. But later on, a girl from my class called Safia got it on pirate, from Pakistan, where she was from. And so we watched it at sleepover. And then we tried to call the corners and do that light as a feather, stiff as a board thing that they do in the movie, where they try and make the girl levitate. We tried to do it and we convinced ourselves it worked. It clearly didn't. But so for that sort of coming of age experience, that film, can I sneak in my second? Am I allowed?
I'm going in. But light as a feather, stiff as a board works. But carry on.
The second one is Sister Act 2, only because that reminds me of my dad taking me to the video shop, and I'd make him get it out for me every weekend for about 3 months. And I remember just seeing Lauryn Hill on TV and just thinking she was the most exquisite person I've ever seen. I was like, wow, I need to be her.
What was the video shop?
Moonlight Movies in Kingston, because there was Moonlight Movies and there was a Blockbuster down the road. But if you're a real one, if you were being loyal to the community, you were sort of essentially boycotting Moonlight. The Blockbusters and go to Moonlight Movies. Yeah.
Okay, you can have both of them.
Thanks.
What's the film you most relate to?
I find this question quite hard, but I would say, Empire Records.
Love it.
Yeah, I'd say Empire Records, because it just reminds me of my first job, which wasn't actually in a record store, but it had the same sort of energy. I used to work in this really it was like a skate and surf mega store called Legends in Kingston. And I guess a lot of the boys I grew up with, they're either skaters or roadmen or somewhere in between. but working there felt like Empire Records, like, because we got to play whatever music we liked, because we had a boss called James who was like a bit of a stoner and like responsible enough, but he just sort of let us get on with it. We'd sort of do no work and like help people, but essentially no work and just like listen to tunes all day and just hang out and like chat. And Empire Records just really reminds me of that time and me first watching that movie with one of my best mates, Danielle, and I was really into the soundtrack as well. I was obsessed with the soundtrack. And actually, funnily enough, you know when you sent through the list of films to talk about, and Grease 2 was in the brackets, and I laughed because I shit you not, and I swear my daddy's love, I'm a Grease 2 truther, and Maxwell Caulfield
is in Empire Records.
And about 6 years ago, I saw him in a branch of Scrivener in Covent Garden. And I remember looking at it and nobody else cared. I was just like, it's the guy from Christy.
Did you go and talk to him?
Of course I fucking didn't. I didn't. No, I didn't. But he was buying some sort of card. I couldn't see it. I was like, oh my God, it's him off of Grease 2. But yeah, that was as closest as I got to him and Stephanie.
I heard some really good news the other day. Someone, I'm not going to name any names because I also don't know the names, but someone I know was doing makeup on a job that Maxwell Caulfield was on and said to Maxwell Caulfield, I'm a huge Grease 2 fan. And Maxwell Caulfield talked to her about Grease 2 for ages and was amazing about it and said, yeah, still in touch with most of them. Such a great time, blah, blah, blah. Made me so happy.
So happy they're still friends.
Still friends.
Oh, that's good. Listen, he got a beautiful singing voice. Love will turn back the hands of time.
Beautiful man, beautiful singing voice.
Exactly.
Behind his charades. What a guy.
Let me not start.
Yes, please.
Well, which I mean, there's so many good songs in that. Let's do it for our country.
And then I'd like to hear your charades, please.
Behind my charades. Or what's the other one, though?
Yeah.
No, go on. What's it? No, that's Love Will Turn Back the Hands of Time. That's my jam. That remember, I love you. I won't be far away. Cool Rider, also a banger.
There's not a bad one amongst it.
Very,
it's
very good.
It's a fucking masterpiece.
Indeed. Anyway.
What is objective? Oh, no, hang on. We're at everyone's favourite part of the show.
Go on.
What's the sexiest film you've ever seen, Clara?
Well. Got a few answers for this, too.
Okay, one of them's quite. You can take your time.
Okay. I mean, one of them's quite on the nose, because it literally is about sex, but it's a fucking sexy film. It's nine songs.
I knew you were going to say that.
Did you?
Yeah, because you're a music person.
Well,
that's a music person's sex film.
Yeah, I guess.
But I've heard a lot of people not like that film, sexy wise, and those people aren't music people.
Well, I guess the Brixton Academy is really my kink. Gets me going. No, do you know what it is? Obviously, they fuck in the film and that's what happens. But I think it's really sexy because I think it just shows, you know, that guy Kieran's penis. No, it just... No, but I think it just shows how imperfect relationships can be, you know? And I think the sex that you have with people can change and... And obviously, like, it's like super lusty in the beginning, and then there's like a couple of times they have sex, and you can tell they low key sort of hate each other, but they still sleep with each other. And but I just think it's a really sexy film, and I like the fact that it doesn't end in a particularly happy way, but just quite a harsh way. So that is sexy. And obviously, they're both two very attractive people. I also think Bound is very sexy.
Bound is sexy.
And, like, you know, I'd say I'm mostly heterosexual, but listen, when Jennifer Tilly says to Gina Gershon, "I have a tattoo, would you like to see it?" It's like, yes. All right. Yes, I would.
Yes, I would. Jennifer. Thank you for offering.
You know, sexy ass film. What else is sexy? I do have a list.
Let's hear the list.
Oh, Waiting to Exhale. Just because Angela Bassett is the finest thing walking. And when she realises her husband cheats on her, when she burns all his shit and walks away, it's some fucking sexy shit. Like, I just love how defiant she is. But I think my sexy film is... Do you know Frankie and Johnny?
I love Frankie and Johnny.
It's Al Pacino and Michelle Pfeiffer. It's like the first film they did together after Scarface. And it's got... So she basically, Michelle is a waitress.
She makes him make noise in sex.
Yeah. But I think it's really sexy because this one scene, it's not when it's after they've had sex and they've just started seeing each other. And so people that don't know, he's like this ex-con and he's out of prison and he gets a job in this diner in New York, and Michelle Pfeiffer has, you know, she's a lovely woman, but she's quite a hard woman. She's had a lot of shithead boyfriends, and like she has her guard up with him quite a lot. Then they get together anyway. She's milling around her apartment, and he stops her. She's in her robe. He's just like, take your robe off. And she's just like, why? And he's like, I just want to look at you. And she's like, no. And she does it, and the way he stares at her.
Yeah.
It's so fucking sexy because he just wants her so much, but not in a sort of like, oh, I really want to dick you down. I mean, obviously he does, but it's, he just thinks that she's really beautiful. And I think he just sees that she's, you know, that she just needs to be like taken care of a little bit. And I think she starts talking about like a pet bird she used to have. She's like standing there just like, oh, whatever. And he's really mesmerized by her. And I just think it's really sexy.
Yeah. And he does that with his mouth, doesn't he?
A lot. Yeah. A lot.
I love that film and I haven't seen it in a long time. It is also like, can't be hard to act looking at Michelle Pfeiffer like she's the most beautiful woman in the world.
I mean,
I'm not saying Al Pacino's not a great actor, but that's got to have been the easiest bit of acting he's ever had to do.
I mean, the way his eyes light up, I mean, obviously she clearly didn't, maybe she really did do it. I suspect she didn't, but he looked delighted and it was really sexy. Also, don't mind the title, but Little Children... Just because of Kate Winslet and what's his face, Patrick Wilson, they have sex on top of the washing machine. It's really sexy. They're having an affair.
That's a tricky film all over, that one.
It's very, very tricky.
Speaking of tricky, we got a subcategory: troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. What's a film you found arousing you weren't sure you should?
Surprise! Got multiple answers. Well, only two this time. Sorry, I know time is of the essence. Jim Carrey, but not as Stanley Ipkiss, but as the actual mask when he's got the green mask on.
Yeah,
I find him really fucking sexy. By and large, I'm not really. You know how like people make fun out of Disney adults, and I shouldn't make fun out of adult swing dancers because I think it is. I love to dance. That whole zoot suit shebang, I find it very attractive. I think it's very sexy, and I just love the confidence of his character. And even though the green face is slightly demonic, I find it very attractive. So that is one slightly worrying wide on. And the other one, because he's quite problematic in real life, but do you remember that film with Mark Wahlberg called The Fear?
Fear?
Yeah. Him and he's an awful person in the film. Like, he's actually terrible and very scary, but he's fucking sexy,
fit.
Man.
He's fit.
He's fucking fit.
He is fit.
He's really sexy. And also Eddie Murphy in Vampire in Brooklyn I find quite sexy. Even though he's kind of demonic. But I don't think I should find him sexy because he's
meant to be sexy. Vampires are always sexy, aren't they?
They are, but I think because the makeup really scared me, I shouldn't have been, aroused, shall we say. But he's kind of sexy.
Really good answer. What is objectively the greatest film of all time, please?
It has got problems, but objectively, I would say West Side Story. I think it's beautiful.
The new one or the old?
Joe, I saw the new one for the first time just 3 days ago, and I did think it was pretty spectacular. I really did enjoy it. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
I was hoping I was going to believe the hype. And there's a couple of moments I thought, oh, I don't know, but I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And, if it was anybody else but Spielberg, I probably would have given it a bit more side eye. I think Aaron DeBose is absolutely luminous in it. I thought America was done perfectly.
Yeah.
It was, I was like screaming and clapping at the screen. I thought she was brilliant. The kid who plays Riff, I think he's so good.
Mark Face,
that's it. Yeah, I think he's so absolutely good. Brilliant. But the original, I absolutely love it because it just takes me back to being like a little kid and just sort of discovering musicals for the first time on like Sunday afternoons and just, everything from like the score, like the initial clicks, just all the dance numbers, just wanting to be everyone in it. I think it's beautiful. I mean, again, with the 2022 lens and actually watching interviews with a lot of the cast, especially with Ariana DeBose, about the Latino representation, about the Afro-Latina representation, I think they have wronged. They've made right a lot of the wrongs from the previous movie, from the original movie. But I think it's great. I love it.
I fucking love it.
It's good. It is.
You can
good.
Have that. I really That's... like that you picked that. No one has.
Oh, good.
What's the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
Oh, okay. The original Hairspray, obsessed with John Waters. Obsessed.
Yes.
Again, that reminds me of Moonlight Movies. It's another one I used to make my dad rent. I have no business watching that, actually, as a kid. But I just love all his films. And I just... like, that is exactly my type of sense of humour. Like, it just... it was... because I think at the end of the day, it's a film about resistance, isn't it? And it is a film about accepting who you are. But I think that's John Waters... his talent, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you have a Serial Mum?
I love Serial Mum.
Yeah.
John Waters thing is, he's so lovely. He's so clearly lovely, and he wants to be, he does all shocking and disgusting and blah, blah, blah. But you're also like, you're so lovely.
Yeah, exactly. Like, do you remember that bit in Serial Mum where, she's in the courtroom and like she's, somebody's giving evidence and like she's, and Kathy Bates, she's just there. It's like, do you remember that bit?
Yeah.
It's so fucking funny.
That was one of the like early 18 movies I snuck into with Serial Mum.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Love it. But yeah, seen Hairspray over and over again, Clueless, Death Becomes Her, Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion, have watched.
Great film.
That's, again, exactly my type of sense of humour. And Strictly Ballroom and Heathers. But I have to pick one, don't I?
Can we have Heathers?
Yeah, okay, go on then.
Which one did you want to pick?
Okay, I want to pick them all. I tell you, I'm breaking all the rules. I'm being your worst guest ever. But
you can have Strictly Ballroom.
Okay, let's have Strictly Ballroom.
Okay.
I've watched that a million times. I think I relate to Fran a little bit. I think I'm a secret Fran. I'm a secret Fran. That is the film that made me fall in love with Baz Luhrmann. And I just, it's for me, yeah, I think it's the soundtrack, but also I just love how stupid and over the top and camp it is and how sort of tender it is as well. Because the dad, he really breaks my heart. And I just love how he comes out of himself at the end of the movie. But then I just love that scene, when they're like dancing to Time After Time on top of the dance school, and you can see the Coca-Cola sign made out like this. And I just think it's really lovely. And I just love the phrase "gutless wonder." It's not used enough, you know.
Did you doing Strictly Come Dancing? Was that some sort of magical dream come true?
Absolutely. It's pretty much the reason why I said yes. I was like, yes, I can live my Fran. my fan fantasy. And actually, speaking of sexy films, that bit when they dance to Perhaps by Doris Day, it's fucking sexy.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking sexy. But yeah.
We don't like to be negative, Clara Rampo. What's the worst film you ever saw?
Worst film I've ever seen. All of the 50 Shades. And again, Jamie Dornan and I've gone blank on her name, wonderful
Dakota Johnson
are brilliant actors. I think they are genuinely very talented. But I think even they know they weren't very good movies. But again, if they're on TV, I'm probably going to watch them, but they're terrible. But recently, one of the worst movies I ever saw was that DJ movie, We Are Your Friends, with Zac Efron and Emily Ratajkowski. Don't see it, Bev. It's not very good.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I stand by Fifty Shades of Grey, the first film. I think it's good.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think it's an interesting film.
I mean, again, if it's on TV, I'm going to watch it. Like I saw it in the cinema with a group of friends, and we were howling the whole way through. I feel like, again, there's a knowing wink where I think Jamie Dornan is very aware that all the dialogue he's been given to say is absolutely terrible. So in that way, it does make it good, but God bless them. They really committed to a three film deal. Yeah, exactly.
Clara Rampo.
Yeah.
You're funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
I'm not going to say Coming to America because everyone says that, don't they? But it does. It really does
you
make
can
me laugh.
Say it. It is funny.
It's just everything comes back to regression to childhood, doesn't it? And that is just me pissing myself, like with my brothers or with my cousins, and just laughing at it so much. And, you know, Sexual Chocolate, Let Your Soul Glow. I actually did some work for the Coming to America sequel, which we won't talk about too much because, you know, let's not dwell. It happened. Mm-hmm. But I had the time of my life because I got to hold a Zamunda, a ZNN microphone.
Oh, wow.
And I was absolutely delighted. But that film was fucking funny. Eddie Murphy's a genius, but Trading Places always makes me laugh.
What do you mean you were holding a mic? You were in the film.
So there was a big promo around it, and the wonderful I believe he's called David Schneider, great British actor, but he's now a director. He's brilliant. He directed it. So I had to be a correspondent for Zamunda and throw to Trevor McDonald, and they gave me a Zamunda microphone, and like they put up the Zamunda flag in front of the National Gallery, and I was reporting live for the king, and so that was a lovely full circle moment.
That's
so
cool.
We love Coming to America for that. But Mean Girls always makes me laugh. The Sweetest Thing, have you seen that?
Yeah,
it's fucking funny.
Yeah,
it's really fucking funny. And I think you know, when it comes to sort of like female, I guess, led gross out comedies, I think that was a bit ahead of its time, or just wasn't given the same, you know.
I think you're right. I think it was slightly ahead of her curve or something.
Yeah, and Selma Blair is fucking hilarious in it. Like, there's this brilliant scene where she goes to the dry cleaners because she's got cum on her dress and she's trying to get it out. and then when she goes, the dry cleaner's like, oh, what is this stain? And she's like, oh, I don't know. And then he like starts scratching it and he sniffs it and he licks it. then her high school pastor comes through, and then like her old dentist comes through, and everyone. But there's just so many growth. It was. I think it came out around there's something about Mary era, but I don't think it gets enough kudos for how funny it is. And also Mallrats, because that reminds me of when I used to work with all my mates in the shop. Just because I love Hooper X as well, but that's He's Chasing Amy Lamb. But it got me into all those sort of. Those Kevin Smith movies.
Yeah.
Stink Palm.
Clara Rampo, you've been wonderful. However, when you were eating your red velvet cake and your enemy, who shall not be named, but they are a presenter and in a similar game to you, and they were annoyed that you were doing the red carpet at the World Expo that was on, and they really wanted to do it, but you were like, no, I want to interview those inventors and whatnot. And your enemy, Holly Willoughby, let's call it.
Oh, no, let's not send for Holly Willoughby. Let's not send for Holly Willoughby. We cannot do that. The Daily Mail have a fucking field day.
It was Philip Schofield. And he put cilantro in your red velvet, your worst herb. And as anyone knows you, you're full of love, but there's one thing you hate, and that's cilantro. Or for our English listeners, coriander. And you part choked on the cilantro coriander, but more really choked on the rage you felt that your beloved red velvet had been sullied by your least favourite herb, the cilantro. You started choking with rage. You said, "Is that Schofield? I bet it was Schofield. I bet it was Schofield." And your throat closed up and you died. It took ages. I'd say it was 25 minutes of just your throat, choking on the rage. And your friends stood around and Philip Schofield wandered in and he said, "Goodbye, Clara. I won't miss you at all." And I was there with a coffin, you know what I'm like. And I said, "Philip, this doesn't seem like you. You usually seem very cheery and lovely. What's going on?" And he goes, "I wanted to do the World Expo. I wanted to do it." And I go, "This is mad. This is honestly mad, Philip." And he said, "Don't tell anyone." I said, "All right, fine. Listen, you've earned your place, I suppose. Go off you go." And he ran off to do the red carpet at the World Expo. And he wasn't as good as you would have been. But I guess we'll never know because now you're dead. Anyway, I try and get you in this coffin I've got, but because of the expansion of your throat due to the rage caused by the cilantro, your throat is so massive, it's now bigger than your shoulders and head. And so I can't fit you in this coffin. I have to chop off bits of your neck and shoulder so that I can fit you in. I managed to lay everything on top. The coffin is now absolutely ram-jammed. There is no room in this coffin, except there's enough room to slide one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show the people of heaven when it is your turn? Clara, Ampho, go.
I'm going to contradict, I think, a lot of my answers. But in this moment, the film in my heart is Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
And they are delighted to have you. All the red velvet cakes are so happy to see you.
Oh my gosh.
Film with you.
I'm delighted.
Clara Ampho, you've been excellent. Is there anything you'd like to tell people to watch or listen to or look out for or dance to?
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's it. Oh, you can listen to my radio show if you like. You can tune in. Radio 1, Monday through to Thursday, 6 to 8, Future Sounds. Holler for a shout out. Everyone loves a good shout out on the radio. So if you ever want to hear a song, send me a text. You can listen to my podcast, This City. And I'll be about on your telly. I've got a new show coming on BBC Three if you feel like watching it.
What's that called?
It's called The Drop, and it is a competition show for streetwear designers. So there you go. Ooh. And it is, the head judge is the wonderful singer and occasional actor, Miguel, who's brilliant. So we had a nice time filming that.
People really do love a shout out.
They do love a shout out. Do you want one?
I love a shout out.
Would you like one?
Give us a shout out.
Okay, all right. Tune in soon. Let it be known. Shout-outs
so great? They're because so great.
They gratify our little fragile egos. You're like, wow, someone said my name to the name. Yeah, exactly. Someone said my name on a microphone to the world. I must be something. Yeah. So there you go.
Clara, thank you for your time and for doing this.
Absolute pleasure.
I wish you a good death. good day. And thank you.
Pleasure.
So that was episode 191. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 15 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Clara. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. That is a lovely thing to read and I really appreciate it. I hope you're all doing well. Thank you so much to Clara for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another banging guest. But that is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Looking for a fabulous fashion brand that celebrates you? Then look no further than Boston Proper, where styles are designed with you in mind, so you can look and feel amazing, no matter the day, season, or occasion. At bostonproper.com, you'll find fashion that knows you best. For over 30 years, Boston Proper has been the fashion destination for confident women who want to elevate their look with unique, sophisticated clothing at affordable prices. Visit bostonproper.com today. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.
Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.